So good morning, everybody. Happy New Year. I hope you had some time to enjoy life and forget about the university and all the hard work you have to do. I wish you all a successful 2015 and an exciting 2015. And maybe one or the other will be even very successful in terms of examinations and thesis projects. So good luck. Today we want to continue in the text on diagnostical medical image processing. And I have to reduce the number of chapters a little bit because I'm not as fast as Andy Meyer, who did the lecture in the past 2 years. So I will skip Katsiewicz algorithm, and I also will skip the MR reconstruction. And I will now continue with the chapter on algebraic reconstruction. And then I will close the reconstruction chapter because we need the upcoming lectures to talk about image fusion. That's as important as reconstruction. And you have to have some basic knowledge, and you have to be equipped with basic techniques with respect to image registration. And I want to make sure that you get this. So we talked so far about modalities. Let me just check whether I can switch on the light here. Yeah. We talked about pre-processing. And currently we talk about reconstruction. And in particular, we are considering reconstruction from X-ray projections. And if we talk about X-ray projections, it's important to remember Bayer's law that tells us the observed energy, the observed intensity in the image at a certain pixel is the intensity we get if nothing is in between the X-ray source and the detector times. And now we have an exponential decay minus fx y integrated over a line L. That means we integrate the function we want to reconstruct. In this case, it's a 2D function where we observe 1D projections. We want to reconstruct the function f given the projections. And equivalently, we said, OK, this is equal to minus integral fx y dl. And for each pixel, we get this type of equation. And we have to solve the system of integral equations if we want to compute f of x, y, given an X-ray image. That's something we have considered very, very, very detailed. And we started to look into reconstruction methods that make use of this analytical characterization, and we found out that there is the Fourier slice theorem. And what does the Fourier slice theorem tell us? Well, once again, that's the figure you have to keep in mind. We have here our projection rays. We have here our detector. 2D function has to be reconstructed. We have a 1D detector. And the Fourier slice theorem tells us that the Fourier transform of the 1D signal can be found in the Fourier transform of the 2D signal that we are looking for if we look at the elements in the 2D Fourier transform that sit on the parallel line to the detector line. Yeah? And that means if we rotate around an object and capture different X-ray projections, we basically generate here the Fourier transform of the 2D function that we need to reconstruct. And then we apply the inverse Fourier transform. And then we have seen, this is given in polar coordinates, so we have to do a coordinate transform. And then at the end of the day, we came up with a very powerful algorithm, the filtered back projection algorithm, that decomposes the reconstruction problem given this set of integral equations, basically into a two-step algorithm where we do a convolution of the observed signals with a high-pass filter, a REM filter that is basically nothing else but the absolute value of the Jacobian that we get out of the Fourier coordinate transform from polar coordinates to Cartesian coordinates. And after the filtering, we have to do a back projection, which means smear the projection through the slice that we want to reconstruct. And then we looked at different geometries. We said this is not the way X-ray systems work nowadays. Usually the geometry looks like this. We have the fan beam geometry, or if we have 2D detectors, we have the cone beam geometry. And we did a lot of geometric analysis, and it turns out at the end of the day that all the reconstruction methods that we can use in practice, even for these modified geometrical setups, are ending up with a filtered back projection type of algorithm. Yeah? For us, it's important to remember filtered back projection algorithm is the working horse of current computer tomography system. So if you go downtown in our digital radiography or radiology department of our university hospital, if you see a CT scanner over there, you can be 100% sure that this CT scanner will use filtered back projection for reconstruction. Okay? So filtered back projection is the working horse. Okay. Interesting. I mean, we have multiple pixels. For each pixel, we get an integral equation. So for a scenario of multiple measurements, we get a whole set of integral equations, and we solve this analytically using analysis methods that we know from analysis, including Fourier transform. And now we go one step beyond and look at a different strategy to deal with the system of linear equations. And that's what we will discuss today in detail, given the slides in the web. But I will give you the big picture, then it's easier for you to follow the upcoming sections of the set of slides we have prepared for the lecture. So let me write again. So we have our minus logarithm I zero, and we also can say this is the projected point, yeah, P. And this is the integral over line f of x, y integrated over the line. We all know how to read this. This is a little bit hand-waving notation. That means integrate the 2D function along the line element cell, yeah? Given Brasenham's algorithm that you know from, maybe that you know from computer graphics, you know how to track the line and to integrate over the function. Okay, now let's approach this with the knowledge we have about integrals. If you see an integral, what is the first association you have? Well, the first association you might have is, okay, I have to look up the formulas for integration, integral of 1 over x is logarithm, and all these complicated formulas you learned in the first and second year of your university career. That was a joke, sorry. That you should have learned in the first 2 years of your university career. You try to solve things analytically. But, you know, engineers like we are mostly follow some intuitive approaches. So what is an integral? I mean, remember your good old days at the Bavarian school or the Indian school or wherever you come from. It's everywhere the same. Ingmar, where are you from?
Niedersachsen.
Maybe that's new for you. So Ludwig, hello. Yeah, usually you start the new year with some goals, you know, ambitious goals, saying I don't want to be late in the lectures this year. And if you show up in the first lecture already with a 11-minute delay, that does not tell me that you are very strong in setting up your goals. Don't worry.
Perhaps it was not his goal.
That's maybe true. Maybe his goal is to enjoy life way more than he did in the past and take it easier at the university. Actually, I don't care. As long as you can answer my smart or stupid questions within the exam, I'm happy. Good. Integral. What do we have in mind? Ingvar, listen. So you have here, for instance, a function. And we want to integrate the function. So this is f of x. This is x and y. And this is the function we have. And we want to integrate the function, let's say, from a to b. And I compute integral a to b fx dx. That's a number, actually. That's a number, right? A real number. If it's a real function, real valued function, that's a number. So this is a real valued number. And we have a geometric association with this number. What does the number tell us, Ingvar?
The area beyond.
Yeah. I know what you mean. So this is basically the number we compute by the integral, OK? Also here, we compute a line integral, so we compute some area over some function, some area. How can I compute areas? Well, if I want to approximate the area, I can say, OK, I have here stripes. And so on. And I replace this by the approximation saying I sum over all the elements from A to B. Then I have this, the width of the stripes, let's say delta S, times the function value at the point I. And then I increment by 1 or by 1/2 or whatever. And so I have an approximation. Right? You smile? You like it. Good. Okay. That means the integral can be, and now we take again our hand-waving strategy, the integral can be represented also by a sum. Okay? The integral can be represented by a sum. That's what we keep in mind. And that means we transform the integral equations to a set of equations where the function values are used in linear combinations. And that means that the observation is a linear combination of the function values that we don't know. And reconstruction at the end of the day, in this case, turns out to be the solution of a system of linear equations. We will define exactly how the system of linear equations looks like for the reconstruction problem. But for me, now it's important to say, okay, the integral is replaced by an approximation, numerical approximation. That means a summation. And we are now in the discrete, and we consider the reconstruction problem in the discrete. Now let's talk about a few numbers. Let's think about a 3D volume we want to reconstruct. Yeah, so we want to reconstruct, for instance, the skull. And the typical size of a volume is 512 by 512 by 512. Why do I use 512? It's a power of 2, and I'm a computer scientist, and I don't think in the powers of 10, but in powers of 2. Yeah? 512 is 2 to the power of? Yes. You don't remember, you can think. Take your time. 2 to the power of 9. Yeah. 2 to the power of 9. Okay. I know it because I do this now for 20 years in the lecture, so I remember these things. in your situation, I would have reacted the same like you. So how many unknowns do we have if we have to reconstruct this volume with 512 by 512 by 512 volume elements? How many unknowns?
512.
Yeah, and how much is it? 2 to the power of 9 times 2 to the power of 9 times 2 to the power of 9 is 2 to the power of 27. Wow. That's quite a lot. I mean, can you imagine having a written exam in mathematics the first year of your university career? I think the situation you had to handle in the exam was 3 by 3 matrix, right? 3 equations with 3 unknowns. Now we have 2 to the power of 27 unknowns. And the question is, how many equations do we have if we rotate around the object and we capture images, let's say, of size 512 by 512, and we have 512 images. So for each image, we have 512 to the power of 2 intensity values. Each intensity value gives us 1 equation. Yeah, well, 1 equation. And that means we have 512 to the power of 2 times 512 equations. So we have 2 to the power of 27 equations. Cool. So that's a matrix, 512 to the power of 3 times 512 to the power of 3 that we have to invert. Yeah. Now you can say, the first year at my university, I learned how to deal with systems of linear equations. There was the famous Gauss-Seidel method. Yeah, and try to solve this system of equations using Gauss-Seidel method. You will die. Not you will die, the computer will die. Yeah, you will never ever be able to solve the system of equations that you end up with. So the message now is we have huge systems of linear equations that we have to solve. And none of the methods we have learned so far actually work. Yeah? That's also why my colleagues in mathematics my colleagues in mathematics always say, if you want to do math, it's very nice, and there are very nice algorithms. And if you really want to screw up with all these methods, go into medical image processing, because there all these things don't work anymore. We will look into that in a few minutes. Yeah, the sparsity is given, yes, but it's not a structure that allows you to decompose it in a nice way. Yeah, we will look into that in a few minutes. So we have systems of equations that we don't like. Yeah, the size is out of scope, and that's also the reason why these numerical methods based on systems of linear equations haven't been considered in computed tomography. If you look at the history of computed tomography, Hounsfield and McCormack, they built the first CT scanner, I told you already. The first CT scanner was using the linear reconstruction method, solving systems of linear equations, but their slice size was 64 by 64, and that's not so difficult. They could deal with it with the computers that time. In the, let's say, past 5 to 10 years, the CT community reconsiders these methods again, because with the computational power provided by graphical processing units, GPUs, we have very powerful architectures all over our PC world. That we now can deal with this type of problems and the number of equations, and these algorithms that we end up with using the algebraic approach have also a few advantages, and that's why industry and also research is now more and more considering the algebraic reconstruction methods. And there are first systems out there that make use of algebraic reconstruction techniques. And I will tell you about this later in more detail. So it's not bad to know these things. And a few years ago, as I said, this was considered to be more an academic type of approach, but it becomes more and more important and has also some, I don't know why the beamer now stops working, it becomes a practical relevance. Okay, so that's the first type of algorithm we want to consider. The second one for the story of the upcoming lectures is the following. I hope the beamer comes back. If we have here our observed intensities, or in the intensity, we say this is our measurement. At a certain point in the image, we measure the energy of the X-ray photons. We can also say this measurement is a random variable, a random measurement. If I measure this a second time, and a third time, and a fourth time, I will get different values. Yeah, so I will have noisy data, because these are measurements. So I consider this as random variable. We consider measurements as random variables. And then we can apply the so-called maximum likelihood estimator. So if I have random variables, let's say x1, x2, x3, xn, I observe n random measures, and I know that each random variable underlies a probability density function for a given parameter set B, or let's call it theta. We can estimate theta, saying theta is estimated in a way that we just maximize the probability of observing these random variables for a given theta, I is 1 to n. That's what the maximum likelihood estimator does. If we have a random variable, we can characterize the random variable by a probability density function. Yeah? For instance, I can say I measure something, and then I observe the random variables to be Gaussian distributed. Yeah? So I can characterize the PDF, the probabilistic behavior of the random variables by a Gaussian density function. A Gaussian density function is parameterized in terms of mean value and variance, and if I have a number of random variables, parameter estimation using maximum likelihood estimator is nothing else but saying I compute the mean value such that the joint probability, the product probability of the observation is maximized. For instance, if you remember your good old school days, you got grades, yeah? You had a mathematics exam, you got grades, you got a 1, you got a 1.0, you got a 1.0, of course, you got a 1.0, Ingvar got a 4.0, you got a 3.0, and at the end, the teacher is computing the average value, right? He sums up all the grades and divides by the total number of students in the class. That's the maximum likelihood estimator for the mean value. If you assume that the grades are normally distributed and you have the grades measured and you want to know what is the mean value of the associated Gaussian density function, you just set up this equation and then you compute the gradient and the zero crossings and you end up with a formula that your undergraduate teacher also used for computing the average without knowing that he's actually doing a maximum likelihood estimation. Yeah? So, nice homework problem, look at them. And we do the same. We look at the observations. We know how X-ray particles behave statistically. They are Poisson distributed. And then we estimate the distribution of the material in 3D using the probabilistic behavior of the measurements by using a maximum likelihood estimation. These are the two categories of reconstruction algorithms we want to consider. So that might sound a little strange for you. You have to keep in mind first, I personally like statistics and probability theory a lot. The implication is that I quite often enjoy to ask questions in this direction. The second, what you should know is the integral is transformed into a discrete approximation using a sum, and we end up with a system of linear equations, and I personally also like linear algebra a lot, and this is unfortunately one example that cannot be solved efficiently by using SVD, as most of the linear algebra problems we are faced with in our context here. Okay, and the fact that these systems here of linear equations cannot be solved by one shot, but by using an iterative scheme, we call also these methods iterative reconstructions. Or in the literature, you also find the term ART, that means algebraic reconstruction technique. The algebraic reconstruction technique, ART. ART, okay, good. So let's look again at the simplified situation. If I have a, where is a pointer? If I have a function, let's say a two-dimensional function with entries x1, x2, x3, x4, x5, x6, 7, 8, and 9. These are the elements I want to compute. Yeah? These are the density values of the object I want to reconstruct. And now I shoot through the object with an x-ray beam, with an x-ray beam, with an x-ray beam. And I observe here intensity values, and I know how to compute the intensity values along the projection line by using Bayer's law. Okay, I also can do the same here in the vertical direction and in the diagonal direction, and I get different p measurements, yeah? Different projection measurements, and I can now set up a system of linear equations by saying, well, the function value p3 that I measure, the integral value that I measure at detector element p3, or at the third detector element here, is only affected by x7, x8, and x9. Yeah? It's not affected by x1 to x6. So the linear combination only includes three of the nine unknown variables. The same here. The first value is only affected by x1, x2, x3. So we integrate over these unknown values here. And for the diagonal element, we have to say. And what we now can say is this square here defines one volume element we want to reconstruct. And the length of the intersection of the projection line with the with a square that defines our voxel is a weight that tells us how much this voxel is intersected by the projection line, and this weight implies how much this voxel value affects the measured result. That means if I hit, for instance, this square here on the side of course, the impact of this element compared to the impact of this element is smaller because the intersection is smaller. Yeah? And that means here in our integral equation, we have here different widths in the approximation of our stripes that we use for approximating the volume. So I can set up the system of linear equations this way. I say, okay, P1 is length 1, length 1, length 1, x1 plus x2 plus x3. And this holds for all the horizontal and vertical projection lines. For the diagonal elements here, we have, compared to the horizontal projection line here, we have a longer part of the projection ray going through the voxel square. And here it's not 1, weight 1, but a square root of 2. Yeah? For instance, here we have the square root of 2. So we can build, pardon me?
Why are there two x4 for the P7?
P7? Maybe it's a mistake. Yeah, that's a mistake. P7, x4. I don't know why there are two. Makes no sense. That makes no sense, but let's see what's happening here in P9. Well, we have three. There is a typo. That's a typo. Yeah, that's a typo. This should be X7. There is a typo. That's a typo. Thank you. I can say Andreas did the slides and it's his typo, but that doesn't change anything. I should have noticed this by preparing the lecture. So we have how many unknowns? 9. We have a system of linear equations, so we can write this in the matrix times the vector x1 to x9 is equal to the vector p1 to p9. Okay? The matrix A includes the ones and the square roots of 2 and the lengths. The matrix A is just defined by the projection geometry. It's totally independent of the measurements. It's only defined by the geometry, and that's why we call this matrix A then system matrix. We call this system matrix. And the whole reconstruction problem can then be written as A times the vector X is equal to the vector P. So reconstruction is nothing else. And we did that in the introduction, I think, already in a very simplistic manner. So we have to solve this type of linear equations. X is the unknown. These are the function values. P's are the measurements, the observations. And now the question is, how can we solve this system of linear equations? How can we solve the system of linear equations? Ah, that's the Franconian version, P. How would you solve the system of equations, Ingvar? Not numerically, but in an abstract way. What is required to be done?
Oh, I would try to remember Algol Chi S.
Algol Chi S, okay. I never attended Algo class. So. It's always interesting to see how important the, no, I would say how the perception of each professor is, how important their lecture is for the future career of the student. So I have one colleague who told me, if a student of medical engineering is not attending a lecture on blah, 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 he will never be able to be successful in industry in medical engineering. Yeah? And then I told him, look, compared to you, I was in industry and I wrote software that made real money and I had never attended a lecture on this and I have no clue about it. So your statement is not valid. Yeah. So be careful with statements like that. And for your personal career planning, I also can tell you, during my computer science studies, I never attended a single lecture on pattern recognition. I never did pattern recognition. I did that afterwards. So it's not important what you do. It's something you learn how to learn, and then your career develops. Yeah? So don't be too strategic in your decisions. Do your decisions by heart and identify yourself with the topics you are doing, and if you like it, you will outperform all the others. If you don't like it, you won't outperform the others. So do what you like and do that with passion. That's my my recommendation. I never did medical image processing until the end of my PhD thesis, by the way, or until my postdoc phase. I was never touching a single image on medical, a single medical image. I was doing industrial image processing till I turned 31 or something like that. And then I started to work on medical imaging. So, don't be too strategic. Don't think that it's important to attend certain lectures to be successful. That's not true, except my lecture. I have to say things like that here. Okay, good. How do we solve this? Well, we have to compute the inverse, right? So we just compute the inverse of the matrix. And then we have the solution. So CT reconstruction is nothing else but computing the inverse of a huge matrix. The problem is that most of the time we have more unknowns than equations. And if we have more unknowns than equations, the matrix cannot be inverted. What do we do by then? The pseudo inverse. Yeah? Okay? The pseudo inverse. How is the pseudo inverse defined? That was not the point. How is the pseudo inverse? How does it look like? Well, you can easily remember this. This is A transpose X. A transpose AX is A transpose P, and then X is A transpose P. That's the pseudo inverse. How would you compute this formula if you don't remember it? I mean, you won't remember this 10 years from now. Well, you might even don't remember it 5 minutes from now. But how could you remember this 10 years from now without keeping the formula in mind? In some book, oh, an intellectual guy. You would Google it, right? that's a good strategy, but that doesn't support very much the understanding. Think about you get lost. You are on a boat trip, and the boat sinks, and you are on an island, and at some point you have the feeling, I need to compute a pseudo inverse. You don't have Google, you don't have books, you just have a pen, or you just have sand, yeah, and a stick, and you want to compute it. How would you compute it? SVD, not bad, yeah. Yeah, SVD. I mean, what you want to do is you want to solve this system of equations. What you also can say, I take the difference to be zero. And instead of the difference to be the zero vector, you say, I consider the L2 norm of the difference vector, and I want this to be minimized. And then you compute the derivative with respect to x and the zero crossings, and you end up exactly with the equations above. Yeah, that's the closed form solution of the least square estimator. Yeah, so compute the derivative. Or gradient and the zero crossings. So that's AX minus P transposed AX minus P and you compute out of that the gradient. And the gradient is then 2 times, well, I can't do that fast. So we have AX transposed times AX minus P transposed A X minus X transposed A transposed P my plus P transposed P. Yeah. And now you have to compute the gradient. Well, this here is nabla x x transposed A transposed A x. Yeah. So we see here already the Gram matrix. Yeah. You see in which direction this goes. And the gradient here is zero because the x is not appearing here, not showing up here. So forget about this. This transpose is equal to this transpose. So we have minus 2 times p transposed a transposed x. And this is supposed to be nabla x. Now we compute the gradient. So this is 2 times x, 2 times a transposed a x minus 2 times a transposed or ap, sorry, ap, a transposed p. And this is 0. And then I bring this to the other side. The 2 I can cancel. I compute the inverse of that, so I'm done. Yeah? Okay? So this here is vector. So we have A transposed A. X is A transposed P. And we compute the inverse of A transposed A times A transpose P is X. Okay. So once again, the matrix A is the system matrix Aij, more or less tells us whether one ray hits a certain volume element. Yeah, the Aij describe the contribution of each voxel to each ray. And here are the two important things. We can compute it by the inverse or the pseudo-inverse. and infeasible is SVD or Gauss-Seidel or the methods we have discussed so far. So we look for a solution where we don't have to compute explicitly the inverse of A, but we look for a numerical solution. And I'll tell you a few examples how to compute a proper numerical solution for it. Now for those who attend medical informatics, it's a little bit redundant now. And I think also for medical engineering students, they have seen this also in the first semester, roughly at least. Again, I will describe the basic idea on the blackboard, and the details you will find on the slides. Yeah? So listen carefully to the basic idea. Let's think about the most complicated volume we can think of that can still be handled by hand. The most complicated example we can deal with that can be handled by hand is a non-trivial example, is to use a volume with two elements, with two elements and two measurements. So let's assume we have to reconstruct a volume that has the two values x1 and x2. These are our unknowns. And we have two measurements. Let's say A11 times x1 plus A12 times x2, and the measurement is 25. And we have, or let's do it abstract, P1. Then we have A21 x1 plus A22 x2 is P2. So these are the two measurements, A11, A22, A12, and A21. These are the entries of the measurement matrix. So the system matrix, sorry. So the system matrix A is A11, A12, A21, A22. The measurement vector P is P1 and P2, and the unknowns, so the volume to be reconstructed, TBR to be reconstructed. TBR, yeah, to be reconstructed X as X1, X2. Okay. So I can rewrite this in terms of AX is P. If I look at the first equation, I can also say the following. I can say I rewrite the matrix A in terms of line vectors. And here I have nothing else but the line vector. So I write this to be A1 transpose, A2 transpose. X is P. So I say the first row vector is called A1. The second row vector is called A2 transpose. Yeah? I write this in terms of row vectors. That's a good old trick in linear algebra to rewrite things in different vectors and to reorganize things. So I can write this in terms of a product. I can write this as A1 transpose times x is p1. And this here is a2 transpose times x is p2. Okay? Now look at this. This is a linear manifold, Hesse norm representation. Yeah? This is a vector transpose times x is p1. This is the normal vector, and this is the distance of the straight line to the origin. So this can be here understood in terms in the x1, x2 space as a straight line, where this here is the norm vector, that's a1, yeah? And this here, that's p1, that's the distance of the straight line to the origin. That's a representation of a straight line. So what we do is this: the linear equation is now considered to be a linear manifold in a space, okay? That's just another type of geometric interpretation. So far, you know me already, yeah? Get rid of all the formulas and come up with a geometrical interpretation, okay? I can do the same here. For the second equation, it's another line. Here another norm vector, normal vector, a2. And here that's the distance to the origin. So if I give you a vector and the distance, you can easily draw the straight line that is characterized by the Hesse norm form, right? And now I look for an x that fulfills both equations. Now, if I want to reconstruct, I look for the x1 and x2 that fulfills both equations. What does that mean in terms of geometry? I'm not asking the guys who sit in the medical informatics lecture. The point of intersection, because this is the point the two manifolds share. So the solution of the system of linear equations is nothing else but computing the intersection of a straight of straight lines of linear manifolds. And the algebraic method is now an iterative scheme that does the following. We start with an estimate of the reconstruction. So what we could do is, for instance, we can do a filtered back projection reconstruction and get a result. And this result is this one here. And then we say this is the starting point for our systems of linear equations. And the idea that we follow now is we orthogonally project the starting point, the initial point, the initialization on the straight line, one. Because I tell you, the solution has to sit on the straight line. You come up with this solution, and I say it's not sitting on either of the lines. So it has to sit at least on one line, so we compute the orthogonal projection of the point on the line. Now you are saying, yeah, now it's sitting on one line, but it has to sit on both lines. Then I say, what, you want to have this point to sit on the second line as well? Well, then I do an orthogonal projection on the second line. Then you say, yeah, but now it's not sitting on the first line anymore. Then I say, okay, I'll come back. And it turns out that by this, we end up with an iteration scheme that iteratively guides us to the solution. So what we have to do is we have an estimate of the volume values, and then we do an orthogonal projection iteratively on the submanifolds, on the submanifolds. And what's obvious now is the more orthogonal, yeah, the more orthogonal the two lines are, the faster I am with the orthogonal projections to find the intersection. If the two lines intersect in a very small angle, it takes a long, long time to iterate, to converge. And this is also for us now a geometric understanding how well conditioned a matrix is, how well this matrix can be inverted. if the angles of the column vectors are very small, that means that the column vectors are very similar to each other, and that means that the matrix is close to be singular. And we see this in a very slow convergence of this method. If they are orthogonal to each other, we have a very fast convergence. So that's interesting insight. So we have a geometric understanding how well a linear system of equations can be solved. Yeah? Geometric understanding. Another way is to compute the singular values and look at the singular values, how close a matrix is to be singular. How do I read out of the singular values whether a matrix is close to be singular? What happens? The smallest singular value is very, very close to zero. Huh? And that means that we have a situation like this. And if these two coincide, then that means that we have in our matrix two rows that are redundant, right? So very good geometric understanding. And what we now have to do is we have to compute the iteration formula. So the iteration scheme. I do this rather quick now because this is basic linear algebra. Is there anybody who wants to do that? So let's look at the following situation. We have a straight line, a vector n, that's the normal vector, and this straight line has the distance d to the origin. So this straight line is given n transpose x is d, right? That's the representation of the straight line. Good. And now I have a point P, and I want to project this point orthogonally on the line, and I call this point P prime. So P prime is the orthogonal projection on the line of, it's the orthogonal projection of P on the line. That would be the better English. Okay, so if that is an orthogonal projection, that means, first of all, that the difference vector P prime minus P is collinear to the normal vector, because the normal vector is also orthogonal to the straight line. So if I have an orthogonal projection, these two vectors are collinear, right? That means P prime minus P is lambda norm vector. Okay? It's just the enforcement of the constraint that we have here, orthogonality, orthogonal projection. And the second condition that I have to keep in mind is that the point P prime sits on the line. If the point P prime sits on the line, it fulfills the line equation. That means N transpose P prime is D. And this is N transpose, and P prime here is lambda N minus plus P, sorry, plus P. So this is lambda N transpose N plus N transpose P. And this N transpose N, that's the L2 norm to the power of 2 of N. So it's lambda N squared plus N transpose P. It's D. So lambda is, I can now resolve it for lambda, that's D minus N transpose P divided by the length of n. No, that's the lambda. And now I go up there with the lambda in 1. So it's p prime minus p is d minus n transpose p divided by the length of n to the power of 2 times n. So p prime is p plus d minus n transpose p divided by n squared times n. So that's the iteration scheme. That's the iteration scheme. Yeah? So I take a point p, then I compute d minus n transpose p divided by the length of n times n, and this is the orthogonal projection. And then I get a new p, and if I get another line, I project it on another line using exactly this projection rule here. And this can be implemented within 2 lines of MATLAB, right? It's very simple. It's very simple. And that's the so-called Karchmarsch method that was invented in 1937 and is heavily used in different modifications for algebraic reconstruction. So the Karchmarsch method, to summarize, was it too fast? I mean, that's basic linear algebra. We use orthogonality constraint. We use the Hesse norm form of a linear manifold. And we use the requirement that the projection has to sit on the linear manifold. And then you massage the equations and you come up with an iteration scheme that is actually not very difficult. Geometrically, this is nothing else but the projection of P on the normal vector, and then we take the length of this one and subtract it from d and use this as a scaling factor for n. And this all simplifies if we have normalized normal vectors. That means if they have unit length, you even save the computation of the ratio. What is also worth a thought if you think in terms of efficiency of your implementation. Yeah? Try to avoid ratio computations. They are rather time consuming. So each pixel can be interpreted as a linear equation. That's something we know. The equation forms a line in 2D or a hyperplane in higher dimensional spaces. The point of intersection forms the correct solution. So if we have a 3x3 system, we have planes that intersect. And if 3 planes intersect, you also end up with a point. The point of intersection forms the correct solution. A projection on the respective hyperplane forms a solution that fulfills the corresponding equation. At least one is then sufficiently fulfilled. And if you repetitively or iteratively do the projections on the different manifolds, it turns out that the iteration scheme tends to converge towards the correct solution. Yeah, that's the picture we have in mind. So if we have here 3 straight lines, that means we have 3 equations. We start here with an arbitrary point and iteratively do orthogonal projections. And you see that the iterative scheme leads to some kind of spiral that turns out to end up with the turns out to be at the end of the iteration, the intersection. Yeah? If the 3 straight lines are not intersecting in one point, then you have inconsistent data. Yeah? That means the projections do not fit to each other, and that means the linear manifolds do not intersect in a point, but here roughly in an area. And if you have a situation like this one, your iterative scheme is in a cycle. It jumps up and down and up and down between the different solutions. And this is a very scary situation, and you have to take care of this, because if you get lost in a cycle, your algorithm will not converge. Yeah? So our conclusion is, in most practical situations, we will get inconsistent data, and we have to deal with the situation described here in the figure, that our solution is not converging towards a point, but you know, jumping back and forth between different solutions, because you are in an area where the solution sits, but you are not having a one unique intersection of the linear manifolds or hyperplanes. Yeah, and here is the proof again, with the n transpose x is d. Then we have the equations here again. Recognize d minus n transpose x divided by the square of the norm, and this here is the iterative scheme, and I did the derivation on the blackboard by heart, basically. Yeah. Okay. And this is how Karchmarsch method work. So you have a point in the kth iteration, and you get the new iteration by looking at the equations here, and the normal vectors are defined by the row vectors of the system matrix. That's something where you have to switch back and forth. But the transfer of the formula here into this notation is 1-to-1. You just have to know what are the vectors. And I have to apologize for the notation. We should really write vectors always with small letters. Then it's easier to see, is it a matrix or a vector? So here, Andreas was copying the notation of the book that we use as a basis. But I don't like this notation here. And I also don't like that here, for instance, the transpose is missing. Yeah? So it's a little bit flapsy notation. But don't get lost with these formulas. Yeah, keep this in mind and the geometric interpretation. The rest is first the method. Yeah. If you have Bavarian Abitur, it's the last year of your school career. That's more or less sufficient to solve this type of problem. And if you have Brazilian Abitur, it's also the same, right? Yeah. You learn it already in the fifth year of your school career, right?
Yeah, in the first grade.
First grade. That's the difference. In China? Yixin? When do you learn linear algebra in China?
I was part of the first grade.
Yeah, that's what I expected. And it's better explained than here at German universities. Almost the same, but in Chinese, right?
Yeah.
Good. Very interesting. Good. Yeah, and then a lot of mathematicians jumped on it. Yeah, for instance, Tanabe in 1971 has shown that the iterative scheme converges to the solution if there exists a unique one. I mean, these proofs are painful but important. Yeah, we omit it here, but it's important from an algorithmic point of view and a mathematical theoretical point of view to be sure that this converges and there are no situations where we run into a divergence, so we can make sure that the method works. For us, it's also clear the angle between the hyperplanes influences the rate of convergence to the solution. If the angle is in a way that the two hyperplanes are orthogonal to each other, we are very fast. If they have a small angle, it takes longer. Yeah. Orthogonalization methods. What type of orthogonalization method do you know for matrices? Huh? Gram-Schmidt? Yeah. If you apply orthogonalization methods and you get your lines, your row vectors of your matrix to be orthogonal, then things turn out to be more efficiently solved. Alternative to orthogonalization is, if you look at the lines, why don't you select lines that are mostly orthogonal to each other? Yeah? In the iteration, you are free in using the first line, the second line, the third line. You can also use the first line and the fifth line. And if they are orthogonal to each other, the algorithm converges faster than using the first and the second line. Yeah? That means you should use projection rays from very, very different directions and combine them to each other in the iterative scheme. Not neighboring projections where things are very similar, but projections that really lead to completely different equations. Yeah? And if we have overdetermined systems, and noise. That means we have more unknowns than equations. No unique solution exists, and we run into the oscillation problem, and we also have to fix this from an algorithmic point of view. Here again, the situation for two orthogonal manifolds. Basically, two iterations are sufficient. Here you have a small angle. It takes 4 years to come up with the iteration. Here you see the situation where you have no intersection. That's what we have seen already. And here you have a situation where you have a whole bundle of linear manifolds. And of course, you can now do the projection on line one, and then you project on line six, and you are done within two iterations. If you do the iteration here around all the lines, then you will run into a spiral and you will get a very slow convergence. So if you just take the neighboring lines, then this will take way longer to converge compared to the proper selection of the lines. But it's very difficult, yeah, to have a good strategy to find the orthogonal manifolds. And a lot of heuristics are applied also. So I don't like these animated things. So let's use the convergence rate is not very good. So if you implement, I mean, I'm sure you go back home now and implement the iteration scheme in MATLAB. And you will do, because you will get exercises for the medical informatics lecture. And you run a few examples, you will see that it takes thousands of iterations and it's not moving that fast, the whole thing. So it's really, really slow in convergence. So that's the main drawback. If you use the algebraic reconstruction technique using this iterative projection scheme, you will not be very successful in the practical implementation of this method, because the convergence rate is so slow, and that means that engineers, mathematicians, are doing a lot to improve the convergence speed. And there are different versions, extended versions, for instance, simultaneous algebraic reconstruction or simultaneous iterative algebraic reconstruction methods like SART or SIRT. You will find that in the literature, and we will look into one of the two methods in more detail. You can also use intelligent methods to select the proper orthogonal manifolds. These are so-called ordered subset reconstruction methods. And the other thing where you can improve the convergence is that you spend more time on designing the system matrix, not just the length of the intersection of the X-ray beam with the voxels, but try to apply different models to set up the system matrix. And these things we want to consider now in more detail. And the nice thing is that now we can discuss these algorithms in a very geometric manner. For instance, we can use the simultaneous SRT method, the SART algorithm. And I tell you how this works. This should be exciting for you now. So let's look at the 2D situation. how many elements, how many measurements do we have for this type of scenario? How many X-ray measurements do we have? Four, because these are four lines, yeah? And with each measurement, we have a linear manifold. Yeah? So now I have a starting point. I call this A. That's the Anderson, Ingvar Anderson starting point, yeah? A point. If I call you by name, you know, it ramps up your blood pressure and your concentration goes up, and the experience in the lecture is different. Okay. Now the algebraic reconstruction method with the Anderson start point is, iteratively select some manifolds and then follow somehow the track towards the point of intersection. The simultaneous ART does the following. It says, I have a parallel computer and I can compute all the projections of the point, the Anderson point, on the manifold in parallel. Okay? So what we do is we compute the orthogonal projection here. That's the Anderson point 1, A1. The orthogonal projection here, that's the Anderson point A2. The orthogonal projection here, that's the Anderson point 3. That's the Anderson point 4. Okay? So I have four estimates. And I computed them in parallel. If I have a parallel computer, it takes no time, actually. Yeah? The Anderson complexity is zero. Okay? And now you have four projections. And instead of dealing with the four projections, now in the next step, we compute the mean. That means we compute the average value here of these points and say this is the mean. Okay? We compute the mean. That's A bar. Yeah? The first mean. And then we do the same. And we get here the projections and so on. And then our mean points, they converge towards the center. Then, of course, you have to show that this idea also provides convergence in the ideal situation. And you can show that the convergence rate goes up, it's faster. And if you can compute the projections in parallel, you do not lose too much time. You can also do, dependent on the number of processors you have, not all projections simultaneously, but a subset of projections, and compute the mean. And then you can play around with things and look how much computation time is improved. Yeah? And that's the type of secondary research that starts at this point, yeah? There are now people are thinking about different strategies to do this orthogonal projections and to combine things and to come up with a very fast solution. And why don't you play around with these things at home? Maybe you come up with a smart idea that nobody has considered so far, and you come up with an algebraic reconstruction method that outperforms anything that is known worldwide and that will define the future of CT systems, and you will be awarded with a Nobel Prize. Yeah? Why not? Ah, well, CT is already known, so not Nobel Prize, but maybe the Erlangen Best Student Award. Yeah.
Huh? Does this Erlangen Student Prize also give a million for Europe?
No. No. If we don't introduce tuition anymore, we have no chance to increase the award. You will get €1 from me. And maybe I can also do some kind of primary award. It give you €1, and this is the motivation for you to work on it. Okay? Good. Okay. Good. So there are different ways how to deal with that, and hundreds of methods are out there. And tons of papers are written with different ideas how to combine the different projections and things like that. Okay? Now I lost €1.
Yeah.
Oh. You know, I'm a very poor guy here at the university. I live in safe poverty as a German Beamter. Could we change it to this one here for Obi? No? No, don't worry. You just bring coffee, cappuccino from Starbucks for 4 euros, then it's a good deal for me. Okay, good. Okay. So this is the situation, SRT. So we have the simultaneous projections. We compute the mean value, simultaneous projections, mean value, and then these structures converge. Yeah? And to wrap it into formulas is not so complicated. Once you know how the projections are computed, how the mean vector is computed, and then you have to do all the math. And I omit the formal characterization here. That's I think, not important. That is something you can do at home to check for the correctness of the formula here. This is the mean computation. We remember this component here, the projection on the row vector divided by the length of the row vector to the power of 2 multiplied with the row vector. And here we just replaced the product here by the norm. And here's again a typo. This should be also a square, the L2 norm squared that we have to consider here. Good. Ordered subset, I also told you that's something what we can do, a clever technique to speed up convergence, to take the proper ordering of the projections. And the iterations are performed in a nested way for all subsets. We decide on subsets. We update for the subset, and then we take the next subset. Here is an illustration of it. So we have here different manifolds, and then we use subsets. For instance, subsets number 1 is projection ray 1, 5, 9, 13. Subset 2 is 2, 6, 10, 14. And these subsets should be, the elements of the subsets should be very orthogonal to each other. Yeah? You know what I mean by that, as close as possible. And then things will converge faster. Yeah. Then a few comments on building the system matrix. One thing that we have considered right at the beginning of the chapter on reconstruction was to use binary values, whether the projection ray hits an element. So we set 0 and 1s. The 1 tells us this voxel is hit by the projection ray. The second stage we have discussed today, instead of taking a binary value, we take the length as a weight. And then we also can say one pixel is not a singular point, but a pixel is a square on the detector, and we associate with one pixel not a line through the volume, but a stripe through the volume. And then we take the volume of intersection instead of the length of the projection ray, of the intersection of the projection ray with the volume element. So we take here the width of a pixel and use this volume or the area of intersection for our system matrix, for the coefficients of the system matrix. And the more realistic the model is, the better the system of linear equations will be that you have to solve for reconstruction. So that's what we can do. Another thing is that you also can say, I replace the voxels that are considered to be boxes, yeah, by, yes? Yes?
Nothing else.
Yeah, you weight this voxel by 0 and 1. If you just ask the question, does the projection ray hit the voxel or not? You weight it by the length. If you say, okay, if the projection ray goes diagonal through, it has higher weight than going parallel to the axis, yeah, square root of 2 weighting. And then you can say you consider a stripe, and then you have also a volume that intersects with the volume element. Yeah? And so you get a better characterization of it. And now you can resolve in the next step the cubes by looking at bubbles. Yeah, looking at Gaussians, for instance, bubbles and bubble structures. and characterize here, for instance, the profile of one voxel by these blobs. That's also something you can use. And if you have the blob representation, you get also different measurement matrices. And you can characterize these blobs by a convolution of the cube with these blob representation, and then you get these blurred voxels. That means the farther you're away from the center, the lower the voxel value is. Hundreds of different methods are out there. People play around with it. That's part of research, yeah, to change things, to try to find a better characterization of the matrix and to come up with better reconstruction results. So further extensions can be performed by more realistic objects. For instance, what we haven't done so far is we didn't consider the problem that our X-ray quanta, they are little balls flying through the object. And of course, if a ball hits an obstacle, it's scattered. Yeah? If I shoot with a ball on your head, yeah, the ball will not go straight, but it will be scattered. Yeah, it will hit you, right? Boom. Maybe, or it will hit you, dependent on the way I hit him. And the type of modeling, how X-ray photons are scattered, will improve, of course, the reconstruction result, because it's more realistically representing what we are actually measuring. Yeah? Then our absorption coefficients are not necessarily linear, and they are also energy dependent. So far, we have considered Bayer's law with constant energy. That's also something that is not true. We have no noise modeling incorporated so far. And also the point spread function of the imaging system is not considered. So how is a single point mapped on the detector? How is it smeared? And the degree of smearing points on the detector might have also impact on the reconstruction algorithm. So can we incorporate this? So there are many, many interesting research questions associated with that. Okay? And now we will discuss on Monday two more algorithms, or three more algorithms, gradient descent algorithms. Basically, we define optimization problems and follow the gradient until convergence. We will talk about the probabilistic approach, where we consider the measurements to be random variables. And then I will tell you something about algebraic reconstruction with constraints, where we say we have certain knowledge about the object to be reconstructed. How can this be considered within the reconstruction algorithm?
Do you already know the dates for the oral exam?
Yesterday, my secretary said she put it into my calendar, so it should be set up now. So ask Christina Müller in the afternoon, she can tell you.
And can you already register for it?
Ask my secretary, I have no idea. I don't know. Yeah? Okay, thank you very much and see you.